subject to approach for a number of reasons, one of which is cost, a very expensive process. Another one is that it creates a lot of agita in the community, and we have a lot of that coming just from the tax bills for the school right now. So, you know, you can multiply that by many times. And so it's, I really appreciate any time we can approach it and look at it seriously and consider if it is something that is in our near future or not. And one really important way of doing that is just to consider some of the benefits of it. Because as we all know, we're probably missing out on something by not doing it, since it's a recommended action to take, but no one can really figure out how much or exactly how it will play out, you know, for individual taxpayers. So it always has that kind of, you know, mystery aspect to it, which is anxiety-producing sometimes. So the big benefit from most people's viewpoint for this is equity. And like they say in real estate, location times three, it's equity times three for a reval. That's really why you're doing it. When people call to complain about taxes, rarely do they say, just, I'm too high. What they say is, someone is lower than I am. And that's usually the kernel of what triggers the complaint. And it's understandable. People like to be treated equitably, which is very challenging in our environment because we're not like Wyndham, where they have development after development of similar homes. We're incredibly diverse. I mean, we have categories we collect things in, like old style, and raised ranch, and ranch, and colonial. But we're, you know, everything's just a little bit different here, with very few exceptions, except maybe Wild Wing, parts of Palinville. It's a challenge in that type of community to get everything just right so everybody feels they're being treated the same. And then there's the commercial aspect, which is could be a big benefit to us. The board has been terrific about reviewing tax certs and making decisions which were really painful to make. At least I find them really painful. Often I recommend, per Dan Vincelette's advice, that we don't fight it, that we don't get the meter running with legal fees in court. Why do I do that? Because it's cheaper to shave a bit off and make a deal and settle it. That's going to become more and more likely if the market stays high. And there's a subtle reason for that. It's that appraisals are done in market value. And we work with a translation of market value. So if Lowe's stays at $400,000 assessed value, and we suddenly drop 3 points, as we did last year, we dropped from 48% of market value to 40.5% of market value. We might, they have exactly the same assessed value, but when they get an appraisal done, the market value is much more to their benefit. It looks like they're being taxed beyond what they should be. And that's just how the E-grade works when the market goes up. Your equalization of it, your percent that you're representing for market value, goes down. Not so hard with residences, because we can go with the assessed value on them. But when you go through an appraisal process, you have to deal with market value. And it's a big disadvantage. So over time, we may end up having a weaker position with tax certs than we already do. That won't mean that we'll go to court on all of them when we do a reval, because it still makes sense sometimes to make deals, but you know, generally it weakens our hand to negotiate, weakens our hand to be able to settle where we would maybe try to eke out a better position for ourselves. A really subtle one is state-owned land. It's another benefit we would have. Our state-owned land, which is primarily private forest that sits out west in Palinville, most of it, is sitting at a rate that the state two when we were last assessed. So it's been a long time coming, 3 decades. Is that a huge amount of assessed value? Probably, you know, given what private forest goes for, probably not. But still, it's incremental. You know, you look at all of these facets, and it, you know, we're missing a deck here, we're missing an addition there, interior reno, maybe they never got a building permit, we didn't get to put it in our inventory. That, on top of all these other considerations, makes a big difference. If nothing ever happened, the 1992 valuation would be fine. It would just ride up and down in terms of the EAP rate. But it's also just discovering inventory that makes a big difference and being accurate that you're representing each home as it is today. So those are some of the benefits. I put some other ones in there. You'll see, you know, when you read about revals, you'll see lists and lists of these from the vendors who will, you know, paint a very rosy picture of why we should do it. And we should do it. I'm not saying not to, but the big one is equity and being fair to people. So what's the process? Basically, we're going to go out and develop a whole new database and recollect to verify that we have accurate data. And then we'll make a new determination of value. A lot of that determination is sort of like a submarine race. You don't see it happening because it's all through algorithms that are set up by the state, and they run reports that work against your new data and then start giving you models that you can work with and see where your ranges are. We would also review our neighborhoods, which we haven't touched for 30 years, put them together so they make sense in terms of value. You know, look at what's happened to Liberty Street in terms of sales based on 30 years ago. It used to be very modest values along there, and now suddenly we're having most of them sell for $500,000. So it's, it would make sense probably make sense when we're valuing and assigning those values generally for those regions. So those are a couple of reasons. So what's the best time to revalue? Well, we haven't done it for so long. Soon is the answer to that generally. But because we're at the peak of a market, it's something to really consider pushing the button on, not immediately, because what here's what, how it flows when you do a revalue. We have a look back period of 3 years for sales data. You know what the last 3 years have been like. So we would have skyrocket sales on our books. A lot of you have personal experience with that. You see what things are selling for. Everybody goes on the web, on realtor.com. You can see extraordinary prices for quite modest homes sometimes. So right now, we are still peaking at this current robust market value. So we need some time to let the market recede a little bit. And the value in that is looking at what would happen if you don't do that. If you do something that looks back at 2019, 2020, 2021, or even 2022, those are going to be the height of the market years that you're looking at. So we have nowhere to go in real estate except to recede a bit. And whether it will be gentle or not, nobody knows that yet. But you can see that it's starting to happen. The interest rates are going up a wee bit each week, each time. This week was a big week. It took a pretty big jump. It's starting to make people nervous. Prices have to come down. You know, bankers work loan to value. They can't loan the same amount of money at this value. So you're going to start seeing them receding. We did August sales this week, processed them, and you can see the values are starting a little bit that's a good thing. People will be able to have inventory. You know, they might not be selling at the peak of the market, but they'd be able to buy something that they need to move into. You know, you get stuck in a market that is so intensely a bull market. So that's exactly what we've been waiting for. And we just have to be patient if we want to trigger this, to wait to have at least 1 year that's really good, and then 1 year, like probably 2023, will be tempered, where it's a mixed year. It's coming down a bit, not quite as robust, but it won't be so incredibly outrageous as the past couple of our year markets have been. I'm sure you're seeing this, Jeremy.
Oh, yeah.
Carl Owens already. So that's one suggestion, because if we go in too soon, we would end up having an assessed value that matches the current market value. And then that value would stay the same for at least 3 or 4 years until the plan we would have to commit to for the state to revalue. They request that we do that 3 or 4 years out each time so that we can get the funding from the state. They would just sit there for 3 years while the market receded. And that would mean that you are at higher value for your home still, assessment-wise, than the market. That's not a good place to have taxpayers. And they are not happy when their assessment is higher than what the market value is. It may not mean that you're paying more taxes necessarily, but the perception of it is so complicated that they feel they would be. You know, it would depend, you know, because everybody's sort of rising and falling at the same time. So that's the danger of going in too quickly, given what the market is. On the other hand, if we have funding that's only available for a certain period of time, we want to trigger a reval if that's the course we're taking within the parameter of capitalizing on those funds. It's such an expensive process compared to so many things. I mean, not as expensive as the sewer district, just we've all lived through that. So, you know, it's still very expensive if there's funds we can capitalize on that are kind of once in a long time funds that we would have, then that would be the least painful way to be able to perform a reval. So any questions on timing before we get to the actual cost change?
I like your timeline.
The timeline that you had in the back of them, I think that's very reasonable. And like you're saying, if it's going to be, you know, this may be our one opportunity.
Yeah.
If the board decides that we do have, you know, some funds available, I mean, after that period of time to come up with 400 or 500,000 becomes a very difficult thing to attempt. Okay, can we get, just explain a little bit on the $5 that they're going to, the state would refund, what that requirement is, and then two, the follow-ups.
Right.
And how to, a little bit more information maybe on that.
The state is very sticky when they offer these funds. It's to motivate people not to do a one-shot. They want you to have to come back to the reval process in 3 or 4 years, depending on how you set it up, to do a tweak process, which is not nearly as strenuous as the current one would be that you could do after such a long period. Sometimes people get away with doing trending, you know, areas that need it, but generally it's sort of a light rebound when you've done one within the last 3 or 4 years, particularly if the market hasn't plunged or there hasn't been a lot of huge building developments in the area. And I think, you know, markets tend to go down, but, you know, no one foresees anything cataclysmic. While we have some developments in the area, it's nothing to be dull we got just under 6,000 parcels between the village and the town. So it's the equivalent of under 30,000, which is just a drop in the bucket, or like a revolved cost, but it's something we would want to get. If we then do not perform a sufficient reevaluation in 3 to 4 years, whatever we put on our plan, then we would be in a refund situation with that amount of money. It'd be like a big, you know, just like a tax refund would be, I don't know.
Right, so we don't adhere to that program, and that the 30,000 isn't going to help. The 30,000 is only if we committed to doing the reval according to the state program, 3 to 4 years, or whatever we happen to lay out.
Right. Now, and I had this thought the other day when I was looking at some of the sample plans they put out. Do people just, because a lot of people have just stopped revaluing for a long period. It used to be something like 80% of the state had revalued at one point, quite a while ago. Then it went down to about 48% in more recent times, which is a pretty serious reduction. Some of that's because the state funds have fallen off in terms of how much they used to give. Now, something like 20% of people are not at 100%. 20% are at 100%. So that's just extraordinary. And part of that's because the current market. You know, we have people around us who are at 100%. Very recently, they're now at 80% because it's a struggle to keep up with the market values that are going on. And quite frankly, they don't see advantages to moving the tax base in that direction when they know that the market's going to pass.
Right. But that 80 could become 90 in another year and a half or 2 years.
It could be.
Right.
Right.
So besides the commercial, what's the real incentive to do this?
Equity. Right now, the inventory is getting very long in the tooth, and as much as we commit to collecting it, you know, our code function is chronically understaffed for many reasons, but the other aspect to that is that people don't call to get permits. None of us are staffed to be out, you know, on a police basis looking at every neighborhood on a consistent basis, even if we could see all of the changes going on.
Right.
So a lot of value is not being collected, possibly.
Okay, besides that, then, what's the next?
The next biggest benefit?
Yeah. Right, here's an example. 2019, I bought my house, right? And I thought I'd spent a lot of money on the house. For me, it was a lot of money. Now I had it reappraised, and that is worth double what I paid for it. So now I'm going to get penalized more in taxes because I bought my house in 2019 and the values have skyrocketed.
You would if we pulled the trigger today and we used the last 3 years. I wouldn't call that a penalty. I'd just say it's coming off to market
value. Well, it is a penalty.
Everybody would be coming up.
Because I saved for 20 years to buy a house that my wife wanted. Right? And just because the market went crazy, now I'm going to have to pay more taxes on the house that I really didn't think was worth what I paid for it then.
But you are not the only one that would be revalued. Right now, because you sold, you bought more recently, you're conscious of it. In a reval, even when people haven't bought, they've owned for years and years, they will be revalued. And so everybody will come up. So it doesn't guarantee that you would be feeling hanging out there at that level of market value. People who were never putting their houses on the market, their homes would be brought up to the current market value as well. And when everybody comes up, it lessens the impact. So, I mean, there's an old saying in revals that is not to be taken literally, but a third go up, a third go down, a third stay the same. And in certain types of communities, it's pretty close to the result that you get. I'm not predicting anything for our town and village. It's so far out of my algorithmic capability to predict who would win, you know, who would be at
right.
going down, who would be going up. You would have to run some very sophisticated reports against the new sales data to get those.
Right, but if I'm at X now and it goes up to Y, right, with a rebound, my taxes are going to go up.
Well, taxes, it's relative. Your value is relative. Right now, you know your house is that rate because of the market and how you're following it. People who have been in a house might be at the same rate, you know, for 30 years. They might be at your rate. It's just that it's not as visible to them.
Right. And but what I'm saying, though, my rate's going to go up, right?
And
so if my rate goes up so much, I might not be able to afford to live there anymore.
Well, I think
that's a big fear about rebound.
Right.
But
right. Well, I think the other thing that you got to look at, if everybody's, not everybody, but again, it's a big piece of pie and everybody's going to get a different sliver or a different share of that pie. So if the average home went up 30% in this particular model and yours happened to be going up 35%, then you're going to end up paying more taxes. But if your house only went up 25% in value from what you earned, your taxes are going down. And that kind of, if that's the pie that Audrey was talking about. So, if the average home went up 50%, then you're going to stay the same. If your house went up 55%, then you are going to see a tax increase, or if it went to 45%, you're going to see a decrease. So just because your value of your home on this evaluation went up, that doesn't necessarily mean your taxes are going to go up, because somebody else might have went up hot, even to a greater level than you.
Right. And we're reappraising every house in the town and village, essentially.
Yes.
So it's not just the sales that they're looking at. They're using the sales brackets, but they're not like by your house. They're creating ranges for different types of homes of square footage and similar attributes. So it's not the impact where, you know, people are being singled out that have had recent.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not saying
I'm raising range on this size. Yeah. May not be worth the same price as market value, the same price as a raised range in Jefferson Heights.
Right.
And that's how that's going to work.
My big thing is location, condition of the house, curb appeal, all that's going to come.
Because of our equalization rate, the county tax has been zero for the towns that have a good equalization rate. Our taxpayers' county tax is going up because of our equalization rate.
That's right. Apportionments are affected, depending on apportionments. But again, those are not like the major things. The major thing is that, number one, we're missing out on value, particularly the commercial, capability that they have is not being maximized. And they really need that because they have so much nonprofit being a village. And so they're super affected by that. They could so much more maximize their commercial capability. And that, to Paul's point, it doesn't penalize people who have improved their properties or done recent sales, but it brings everybody into current market value, which moderates the impact of the change.
Well, that's why we wait for additional data instead of 1920.
When a new sale comes in, I mean, it's not no longer based on what that house sold for. You're still looking at comps in the area when XYZ sells their house. Where I believe, and this could be wrong, many, many years ago, they were taxed on the sale, and I think that's where that welcome new neighbor thing came back.
Right. Now
and then somebody that never sold forever, their taxes never went up, and then when somebody was the new person on the block, they went up according to the sale. So the sale doesn't trigger necessarily an increase in taxes any longer.
And, I don't publicize this, but generally what happens over time to all communities who don't revalue is that the higher end homes are being assessed for less because there's an equity lid on them. When I see something that's at the market value of $1 million, I can't even come close to putting that value on the home. And I just don't have the equity of other homes to support it. So that's my lid. If I go beyond that, I get taken to grievance. So I lose. So we keep within the equity of what we can do. What happens is that the modest homes, and there's a price break in every scenario of this, they are the ones who it becomes regressive for them. They are holding proportionally more value, and so they're getting taxed at higher rate in a general way than people in the higher end homes are, because generally I can support the equity in mid-level to lower level homes. And so it becomes what you would call regressive, because you're taxing the people who have the least more over time. I haven't run the reports I would need to give you the actual stats on that, but we see it so frequently when we're doing the actual calculations that we know that it's coming. And we do have some reports that show our center of density, as they call it, is moving outward. It's like a novella expanding. It used to be much tighter in the statistic, and now if you do it on a chart, it moves out, and we're seeing less consistency. That means less equity, and that concerns the state. I don't think the state is ever going to, in near term, say you must do a rebound, because they're just so expensive, and they haven't taken that tack for a long time.
The state, you don't foresee, because they could come in and force the issue, but that's probably not realistic.
They used to. And then they tried to incentivize,
your advantage of aerial versus on-site.
Right. That was my question.
Let's talk about that. We're doing a lot of aerial viewing right now to check on things. It's a godsend, particularly in the town. It's just saves a lot of time. There's me, we have one data collector, we have a senior clerk that pretty much is office bound just through, managing paper going through our office. So aerial makes more sense. The state has realized that aerial of a certain resolution is a valuable tool. It's affordable, much more affordable than having on-site data collectors. Basically, all the good on-site data collectors have left the earth. They were old-time retired people who knew real property stuff. They'd go out, you could put groups of them together very inexpensively, and they'd collect your data for you, take the photos. Those people are not around anymore. So the staffing is an issue with on-site data collection. All of, even the highest level vendors who do this, Tyler and Gar, they struggle, like everybody is, with trained staff to collect data properly. So Ortho has become really big. It has to be of a certain resolution. It would be through the vendor. We don't have that level of resolution. The county can't afford to pay for it. We have a level of resolution that's good on the county map. You can pull anything up and see where buildings are.
Is there street views on some of these items, or is it mostly just satellite coming down
Ortho is overhead.
Overhead, yeah.
Just like the
Google Earth. Yeah.
It's just, we could go in, we could capture Google Street Views, if we need more up-to-date. You can't do every property in our area from the air because of canopy. So we would be doing probably, 10 to 15% site visits.
So does the homeowner have to get permission for you to come on the property to take pictures and look at it?
You can't go on to posted properties, but generally you can get a camera view from the street if it's visible. And sometimes we do that. If we can't get on the property, we would do aerial these days, and have something where we at least know the number of buildings and so forth. But our inventory is wildly good for it being so long. I have to tell you how shocking it is, don't get onto every property, but amazingly enough, you do get most of them. And we never push. Assessors by law cannot demand to go into a home. And because of that, most of us really back off of using that unless somebody is really concerned about their value because of interior issues. And in that case, you know, we will say, I might be able to help you, but, you know, I can't make an adjustment. Your house looks just like this house from the exterior. If you want to do an interior, you know, for your main room so I can see the level of amenity or, you know, rehab, up-to-dateness, then, you know, sometimes they'll let us in and we will utilize that. I think because we don't go into everybody's home, it's a fairer issue just to do exteriors. By and large, they found that the exterior of your home, except for people who are wildly eccentric, is pretty much what the interior is going to reflect. You know, if it's a 60s ranch, maybe there are gentle updates you can assume at this point in time. If it's, you know, a contemporary, it's probably, you know, pretty viable property just as is. So you kind of have to make general assumptions, and because we're dealing with so broad a range of properties, it tends to work out in the end. We are very generous about fixes, you know, in terms of actually researching when people request a review, and we have a whole process that's been in place for many years to pursue that, and it keeps our grievance in a very mellow way for many years now, you know, that we actually will look at value. We show people what our comps are, what the equity comps are. You know, some people like the detail, others, you know, they don't want to see it, but it has been very helpful over the years, keeping good relations. And I think the history of the assessor's office is pretty extraordinary. The assessors that the town has had over the years, they've done just an incredible job in terms of property files. Everybody benefits from it. The code office has benefited greatly from things that have been carefully tucked away in property files and so forth. So we would go into this with that goodwill, you know, and it would help quite a bit in terms of looking, say you look at Syracuse right now. I don't know if you've read any articles, but they did a reval right at the beginning of the market. People were just having these outrageous increases, and each time they did it in another 3 years, they went up wildly even more. And finally, the assessor just pulled the plug. They said, no, we're just going to stop, take a hiatus from this, you know. And so they just, because people were just feeling they were being taxed out of their home. So, you know, assessors have some level of control over, you know, if it's really going bad, they can see it and take action there. I mean, ours, I don't envision going that route at all, but sometimes we just tend to, you know, keep our ear out for those horror stories to dodge the bullets. So, I assume you all think that the desk would be overkill and certainly the value of it is just, it's just too costly, and that you might be amenable to entering into a desk review, which would be the ortho. Would you have any feeling about that? Or would you need to know a little bit more about the results of that process? The desk verification ranges from $350 to $375. And that would include soup to nuts. That would be them running all of the statistical reports and setting up the new ranges and helping with the commercial appraisals, which are done very differently. We actually request income and expense data, look at use, particularly in mixed-use buildings, and those are really what slow you down. It's a long slog going through commercial properties. The state offers their services for very high-tech type properties, so probably, say, the cement plant might qualify, perhaps the railroad expertise, many more, most of them have retired, but if we signed up in time, we would have, you know, be capable of having them do some of those highly complicated appraisals for us at no charge. I am able to do commercial appraisals. I've done most of the newer properties in this area and things that are being repurposed. I would have already visited and revalued most of those commercial properties. And if they built anything, I've been involved with them. So we would have some, you know, level of coverage beyond the renter for the commercial capability. And obviously that affects the village a little more than the town as well, since we have to bulk of commercial property.
Quick question.
Yeah.
So vacant land that lies within the new sewer district should be valued higher than vacant land that doesn't have access to public water and sewer. So that would be part of the revaluation too.
Only if the values show that at this point in time. It's very similar to solar. You know, technically I should be adding all this value to residences, which they of course can get an exemption on. I can't get the sales pairs to show in the sales of houses with solar that it's
you can't find a real estate agent to tell you
the fact is, yeah, that's creating any change in value. So it would be exactly the same with sewer districts. If you started having development there and it became hot, they were selling, that is what would raise the value in that area. So I'm afraid we're probably a few years away from that, having the information from that for that to have a huge impact. But one thing that didn't happen is that because the robust market came in, the residences in the sewer district did not lose value. In fact, they went up in value because of the robust market. Now, I can't tie that to the sewer district only, but new buyers were willing to come in and found that area attractive. And some of it is that, you know, those neighborhoods were aging out to some degree, so it was a natural process. So it's often hard to parse those things. And then the last page, I think you already saw a peek at that. That's a sample from a vendor just saying how the process would flow. And it doesn't, you know, the public relations might sound like the softest part, but the way it's presented, has anybody been through one of these in another community? I've been through two with GAR across the river in my community, and I thought they did an extraordinary job on the PR portion. You know, people really show up with a lot of anxiety to public meetings. They're usually incredibly well attended, and they have really good point people and very factual, and there are some people ask some really tough questions, just, you know, in terms of thinking through a reval. And these are people with experience who know how to answer those questions in a way that people understand, you know, that going into statistics. So that's a really important part of the process, is educating people and getting them ready for it. Then you have the data collection that's sort of going on invisibly because there won't be that many people out, you know, approaching homes. There'll be some here and there.
Right. There was a question I had. There's got to be a certain amount of ground work just to review the neighborhoods, road appeal,
right,
curbside.
So it's important that we make it very public that this is going on. You know, there'll be people who may be asking for data and so forth. So that's part of the public introduction to the fact it's going to happen. I'm sure all of you would get tons of questions and would want to be as well informed as possible. So I would provide you with much more serious packets of information. I have a couple of things that are great from some of the Westchester towns, question answer, happy packages that, you know, really run from soup to nuts, you know, in terms of good ways of answering kind of complex questions and not getting bogged down by it. So it would be a process that you'd want to jump into, have some good resources on. Or you can transfer it to my office, of course.
Perhaps all PR people from
Right. And so then once we have the data, we enter it, we create all new products for it, you know, updated files and cards and ranges. And then we start evaluating things based on all of the sales data that they run. And it's not just our town's data, but they're doing region of data. We're in what's called the letter stocking region, which I find really charming. But it's just a certain grouping of we're not in the Albany region, which is kind of, you know, what we tend to think of when we think of, you know,
letter stocking. That's a little
right. We letter stocking kind of goes from
west.
The river west, and so it ameliorates things a little bit because we're not just going up to the north urban area. So that would make a difference. And then all of this just cooks with all the reports to test and see where these values should be. It re-educates myself and my staff because we've been working at one level for a long, long time, and so then we would have to recalibrate our computer search capability for comps and start producing these new assessments for all the properties. And I'm sure we would end up being pretty hands-on managing the process as well, since it's all flowing through our data systems. Then we start notifying people, new value is going to be this, just as we do with any change in value each year before the tentative roll comes out. Why do we do that? It's so people can look at any increase in value and they can make a plan to come and grieve. They can find out how to grieve, or even better, they could talk to their assessor before grievance. They have time to have discussions. And when you do a revalue, I know, I remember Laura was the assessor up in Athens when they had their first reval in a long time. She had 200 people in one day coming through. And so you give them 5-minute appointments, you know, make sure you get their data, pull it in house, and you just process in those situations. I would hope we could deflect some of that in terms of the public upfront presentation, but you never know. It's been a long time since we've had a evaluation. Then we have a grievance process for people who are still unhappy. The bar will be brought into the whole new process in terms of comps. We'll have a lot more material for them to work with than they currently have. They won't be toggling assessed value with market value in, you know, mentally, which is very challenging for the Board of Assessment Review right now. You know, everything has to be translated that they see into, you know, they see a sales value and a grievance, and then they have to quickly multiply it to get the assessed value, which is what's showing up on all of our records. And then once that concludes, they have a SCAR process, small claims, that they can go through if they're still not happy. And we have a terrific hearing officer right now. He can hear, which our last one, very hard to hear. The bar was not terrifically high, but we knew to take pictures, so we always did very well on that. But he's terrific. He's very fair. Everybody leaves feeling gently unhappy, which is the sign of a good negotiation in a process like that. So they would go through that and possibly have that final chance to have an adjustment. Or if they're still unhappy, they could live a year and go through it all and probably make an adjustment. So there's lots of recourse for people who are concerned about their value. I think the real critical impact is the first task. Animals Point, you're sitting there thinking, okay, I got a notification that my assessment went from 200,000 market value, you know, all the way up to 225. What's the impact of that? They won't know until they get the school tax. When they get the school tax, that will be the first indication of that role kicking into action. They'll be able to see if it's a certain percent difference. So,
right.
And that's pretty much the end of the process.
Right, because there's going to be more assessed value out there when it's all said and done.
Right now, our land table, which is what we use in various zoning areas to assign values to land, is below what things are selling at. It used to be almost double for land value, you know. So that just sort of rides across in terms of how we assess land. In this process, it will be tied to whatever range they come up with, and all that land value table will be updated for each zoning area. Ag, you know, moderate residential, commercial, that will all be laid out new. So all these values will be totally new based on land sales. And we used to never have land sales. You know, I mean, I could never find any comps the first 5 years I worked here for land sales. I mean, you just had to pretty much make a determination by terrain, you know, if you thought it was a lot of wetlands, get people a break, you know, a percentage. But at least we have comps at this point in time. So, but everything will be revalued, you know, not just commercial, not just residential, but land, all categories will be touched.
And I believe you put a calculator on our webpage as well, like what their old tax rate is. Assessment. I mean, I've seen that in the upper towns in the western part of the state. So instead of having to wait necessarily for that bill, once you get to, you know, your notification, you can go online, hopefully on our calculator, on our webpage, to give you an indication of the real effects of what happened as far as some dollars.
I have to think about that, Dale, because I don't know if you, how they would do the outgoing levies.
Well, they might take, you know, like it's yeah. About the same, you've got the same year. But I mean, the one I'm talking about is actually Enfield, New York, and they had a calculator.
I'll get that from you and take a look at it.
Okay, good.
See what they're using as variables.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So really, even when we start this process in January, it doesn't come to completion until basically the school tax bill in 2025.
Right. And
our taxes would be in 2026.
Don't forget, I'm recommending if we could hold on to the funding long enough, I'm recommending that you slip it even another year to have more stable.
We can go out to 24 and not have it affect
right.
Until 26.
So instead of starting
that
this winter, we be starting.
You're retiring by then.
I am retired and I'm still here, so. I'm on a senior income right now.
Well, you can get started.
We're all on a fixed income. Just
you
want to
go for an early bird dinner?
I will be.
You're not
like that. I mean, I've been on the board for 12 years now. But the 12 years I've been on the board, we've been talking about how we're going to do a rebound.
I know.
And the biggest thing I see is just the discrepancy of the county with the fact that I think we have the lowest equalization rate in the county.
Well, that's minimal. What? All right, so because we didn't do a reassessment, I got a $30 tax bill in the county. We do a reassessment, people are going to get hundreds of dollars increase on their taxes.
That's not necessarily true.
It is true.
No,
it's not.
That's what you're being
well,
I'm not saying everybody.
So you know how
some
elderly
people's taxes may go down?
It's a benefit.
So when we had our first house and we wanted to sell it, the realtor comes to the house and she said, well, I'm going to have to look and see what I could compare your house with. Houses like yours that sold, that's what we're going to value your house at. And unfortunately, there wasn't another house like ours in Catskill. So that hurt us as far as the selling point. And pretty much the same thing this time, which is why we have a realtor from Woodstock, because our house can't really be compared with much in Catskill. It's kind of, it would have to have its own category. So
they can do regional, though. I mean, they have more regional MLS people.
Right. So it's I think of it like that. So like on one hand, it could hurt you, but then on the other hand, it might not.
Well,
I think that's what you got to realize. The whole process is not raising taxes. The amount of money that we're going to use to run the town of Catskill and the school districts all is the same. It's just a matter of what sliver of that pie each individual person.
A matter of perception. There are some people who are not paying their fair share right now. I'm not looking at anybody. But it's. Those people have been going late, and other people have been picking up the slack.
Right.
So there will be a reallocation, which we very hard to predict.
And I just showed you all, you know, like a slide from one of the ones out in Western New York, and it was saying, like, this house sold property C, in essence, has been really subsidizing other properties at this particular point, and that's happening in, you know, every community. So really, like you're saying, bringing equity and bringing everybody to a level.
Right. So if you end up paying more, it means that you've had pretty good for some years, believe it or not, you know, in terms of the overall equity factor, at least. Nobody likes to end up paying more in taxes, but that's what it's telling people. If you're paying less, it means you've been paying slightly more, or maybe a lot.
You've been carrying the burden.
And ideally, if it stays the same, that's a nice spot to be in.
That's the Goldilocks one, right?
Exactly.
But I'm really glad that you had that reaction. I mean, I'm so glad that one of you did, because that's going to be the reaction. That's
absolutely, because like I said, I'm being penalized. Well, I'm not penalized, but because we bought before we got overrun by whatever you want to call them, and drove our property back. So I'm being penalized because mass amount of people moved to the area.
Right. So your neighborhood may have seen a larger increase in value or your particular type of property, is what you're saying.
Right.
But that may or may not be true. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, I know
certain village properties have gone up. I get it.
I know mine will. Jefferson,
I agree with you.
Mine will.
You know, I think your reaction is classic, because people worry about taxes, you know, this between the inflation going on right now, the energy we're looking at, you know, for the next few winters. I think that, you know, we're adding another thing to the
right, and I can see
it's adding a stressor to this.
But I can see it now, right, the kind of tax auction is going on right now. There's 15 properties in the town of Catskill. After we're done with this, there could be 30 properties on there, because there's going to be some people, let's face it, that aren't going to be able to pay the increase.
No, but so if
our spending
stays the same,
if
our spending stays the same, there won't be an increase.
Not our taxes. There's going to be people that are going to have an increase.
Right. There could be a longer standing property owner that's been underpaying. And, and it could be the other way as well.
The redistribution could upset people's budgets.
Correct.
I do it from less dramatic.
Basically, what's our budget? What's our tax base? 1.9 million a week.
Oh,
taken. No, I'm sorry.
Worse.
3.9, right?
Well, that's what we left. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So basically, that 3.9 is going to be redivided among.
It's
6,000.
It's a closed system. If Paul ends up paying more, it allows the person overpaying to pay less.
Right. I'm saying is there's people that are on a budget, right? That their taxes may go up. That if it goes up, they're not going to be able to afford to stay in their home. I'm not saying it's everybody, but there's going to be some people.
Well, that's true.
There's people who can't afford because of the pressures.
Right. I mean.
We do have low-income programs.
I think what it can do, I mean, and this really happened to my, you know, that we had, you know, this is in 1992, and we had, you know, so this is, you know, well, way back, my dad bought our properties on course for Jack Omer, because that was my father and mother bought that property probably in 1962, and held it forever. And then the reval came in, and then, you know, next thing is 10 years later, I say, are we going to do something with that piece of property? Or are we building on it? If we're not going to build on it, it was time to move on from it, because, you know, it's a luxury to own and maintain property just to look at it. So that's when that, you know, my mom aged out a little bit, and we said, hey, you know what, it's time to move on, and that's how, you know, Jack purchased that piece of property, as an example. So I guess that's what you're saying. It can affect. Sorry.
Right.
It can, but many other variables.
Right. So, you know, everybody's going to be in a slightly unique situation, but hopefully it's not going to be hopefully there's not a large swing in those pricings for people. It's the hope.
I mean, there's
going to be a certain amount of winning and losing.
There's a certain moderation of it as well. I actually think what you're saying argues against slipping it to starting in 24, where you have another more tempered year of sales to look at, where, you know, it doesn't reflect the peak of the market. And that would certainly give us some level of reassurance that it's not immediately dropping precipitously to being less than what our assessed value then is for some years. So that's my biggest concern with the whole process, is that
right. If
possible, we nail the funding, but still,
we hold on.
People
buy $1 million houses.
At least two
and the taxes are
part of sales. You know,
yeah, people buy $1 million houses, and the taxes are part of it. So that's why we do it.
Although most people who move up here say, wow, I never dreamed the taxes would be so high outside the city.
New buyers are still concerned about taxation. I mean, I got new neighbors, and, you know, they did a lot of homework before they purchased, you know, the house next to me. And, you know, they looked at everybody's comps around, and, you know, they got relatives in Copaig, mm-hmm. and, you know, they decided to come to Green County and Catskill because we were more reasonable, maybe, than certain communities in Columbia County. But again, that's taxation. It has nothing to do with equalization.
Yeah, and I you bring up a good point, though, where when people are looking to move, they like to know the future of your tax rate, and that's one thing our office does constantly, is try to reassure people historically that nothing was in the works for a rebound, because people really are concerned, you know, are we going to buy at one rate and be paying at another rate? So it's something that we would want to resolve and do, and, you know, not have it be a detriment to people worrying about coming to our area. Because, you know, it's not all bad having an influx of people who aren't using the schools and are supporting our businesses and so forth. It's a good value for people who are currently paying their taxes here. So
it is, but it's smart to wait, because the reason it boomed the way it did was because we had COVID.
Right.
And it was just like the way the stars were aligned. It's probably never going to happen again.
The big exit.
2024.
Yeah, I agree, John.
Go
ahead. Exactly.
Yeah, but I don't think the property values are going to go down to what they were prior to COVID.
It takes a long time, and it's hard to predict.
Right.
But I'd be thrilled doing this if they would just mellow a bit, because the stuff I see.
Right, right.
I can't stop, like, yelling it out loud. You're like, what? Right,
exactly.
It's like one after one.
Right.
I'm sure you do the same when you look online. You know, I can't imagine what I get for mine. You know, it's like, of course, you have nowhere to go that you can afford, you know.
Well, this whole move was ideal for people that are ready to retire and leave.
Right.
So we could still push it off to 24 as a start time and still get it done in 26.
Well, what I'm hearing is that it might be more palatable to feel that you have a couple of years instead of just one tepid year
So we're talking about starting the vendor selection in January of 24.
Right.
Which would push everything to the town taxes in 2027. That makes the most sense, but we can put funding aside this year in 2023.
I mean, really, why we're having the conversation is if we have ARPA funds available, if this is a project that the board feels is viable and something that they want to.
But it also puts it out there.
Consider it, it puts it out. People, it's so people understand. It's a soft. It's being talked about a little bit, so that there's an awareness out in the community. And again, as a board, we're going to have to research into the a little bit more and do some soul searching if that's something that we want to earmark some of the ARPA money for. And that helps us start to.
Just follow the 4-year cycle.
Right.
I mean, because they use the state money to follow the 4-year cycle, because they've read about twice in my class.
You have to read it very carefully. It's something you could dig into. We can look at the advantages of
because that's the closest example to look at and see
right.
what they do.
They allow you 3 or 4 years.
I mean, they don't have a lot of, they have a lot more unique property, even though we do, because they have the power of stuff like that. But it's even like a lot of these commercial properties, it's like, what's the valuation on that versus when you're using that vacant land for other stuff now?
It's true. We're getting chiseled away on a lot of our big box retail, and it might reestablish some of that in a way that's supportable.
Well, give us a little.
And it's hard for me to kind of predict what every category would do, but I'm sure we pick on some.
I mean, the ones that have been chiseled has been commercial. I mean, every year you have.
Right. They come out. So I'm going to give you, these give you answers to some of the questions. They're a little cheesy. They're put out by the state, but it's what they have put together.
I have one more question.
Oh, only one more.
Out of the 6,000 houses that we have in inventory, houses and property, right? I mean, Zubinet's house and property, 6,000.
That's everything.
All categories.
Out of that 6,000 in the last 3 years, how many of those have sold?
Oh, percent of sales.
Yeah.
Not as high as you'd think.
No.
I could do that number for you, get it to you.
I
just never look at percent of sales. I'm always looking just at value pretty much. But I could
I'd be interested to see how many sales we had in there or transactions in CAC, which would be a sale, right?
Last bunch of sales I sent in would also include transfers that are like people putting things in to
us.
Sometimes they don't separate out as neatly.
Right.
But we could look for arm's length type sales and give you a number on that. Usually total number would be about 350 a year, for village and town combined.
So maybe 5-7%.
So that's a very minor percent when you take most of the stuff flowing through is just, I could give it to my sister. I mean, just
right.
a variety of,
right.
of deed transfers. So. But we'll get it for you. I'll send it to
you. And I think the working at home and this, with my two new neighbors, that's what they do. So it is changing the chemistry as well. So people still may come to the area because of the remote working status, too. So, so who knows how much we're going to prevent. I mean, I think a certain amount of people may decide they're going to retreat and maybe rural life isn't what they thought it was.
Yeah, everybody likes a second home.
I don't know. They have a $10 trillion deficit in New York City. I'm going to be moving back.
A lot of people from Manhattan are moving to Long Island.
Yeah.
In Long Island.
And they're paying, $8,000 a month in rent.
Right.
And they're just moving into a home that they're going to pay $8,000 a month in a mortgage. And that makes such great sense,
right.
But it blows my mind that anybody has that much money and wants to spend on.
Well, you think of $8 incomes, so So,
okay. Anything else? Any additional questions, or everybody kind of?
Just as follow up, if you have questions, particularly in the next few days, just shoot me an email, and we'll share, the answer with everybody. So. We can sort of use this as a, as we think of it, process. But as I said, my next step will be to put together a little deeper dive with some of the question answer things that you can read through. You can see how other communities have dealt with the upfront PR, because it's very educational, just understanding the process, and will give you a sense of fluency about the process. That it just,
what is it?
Yeah, it just takes a while to get your arms around it. My biggest commitment to it is not to say anything definitive about what will happen, because from what I'm reading, that's a big mistake with the community. Number one, you really don't know, because they can run those reports a million different ways, and you know, and often what you is in your faces data is not really the full picture of the data. So you have to be very careful not to go on surface assumptions. So that would be my number one suggestion, you know, and just to refer people or find the answer, you know, which we can help you do if you're not sure. But, you know, the first thing people want to know, will we get taxable, will we lose taxable overall for the town, you know, just from the board perspective. It's a big mistake to sell it in that way. That's not really why you're doing it.
And really about taxes.
One of the big factors that you're doing it for is that it's the law. And right now, we're very close to not being within the law. You know, if we continue down this path for too much longer, it's...
That's like Bill.
It's like what? Oh.
The other one.
The other one.
Oh, is it?
Nobody goes to jail.
October 15th at the Good Family Mingle Country Club.
Where are they going up there?
Is there?
It's a private party.
Yeah. That's going to be done by
Buell.
Buell, and it's with Young Explosives at all times. Yeah. Okay, so I think we need a motion to approve that application for request for fireworks.
Motion.
Motion by Paul. Second by Dylan. All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion. Those against? Motion so carried. Be nice if somebody lit the rest. I know the community, every time they have fireworks out there, it's like, there's a saying what's going on.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Is it some community or is it private?
It's about 15. So what is it? Expected duration 10 minutes. So it's not. It's good for business. It's great for Pilgrimville. I'm all in on that. Okay, what else do we want to talk about? So we had the fireworks, just a couple of little things here. Budget, I mean, we got some of the numbers in, it's going by department. Like I said, you got to do a little trimming, but maybe we can talk with each committee member a little bit ahead of time, just so, you know, by department, so hopefully we can eliminate some of
probably schedule from Ronnie so we can review that. And that was a good catch the other day by Jared on the matrix that was used. So we got accurate data today. And that data was really just going with the COLAs from 2013 from when Ronnie was here. It's just updated. It doesn't do much as far as, that where we want people to be as a guide. But again, if everything stayed normal and everybody stayed in those positions, that's what their salary would look like today. We're apart. Whatever the final was and everything stayed the same through the inflationary through COLA, that's kind of the way it would be. And like I said, we probably wouldn't hurt to have a discussion, I don't know if it's a couple of us or whatever, get together just to review, because if that schedule is what we want to hold, we have some people that are outside of those schedules already and paid, and we've got some people that aren't there. So that's a topic for discussion. But it would be ideal, and I'm not saying we're going to get there overnight, if we can really slot people in and have a little more continuity to that. Because I think there is somewhat of a problem when we hire somebody new and they come in at the higher end of that, and then we have other employees that are experienced and have longevity of, say, 10 years with us, and then we got somebody that's still learning or whatever they are, it's not a perception, it's a reality, and then they're coming in at the same pay. And I think that's maybe a concern of some of our employees, and we probably should take a look at that. So that's what I got on the salary thing. I think tax cap override, just as a protection, I think we should set up a public hearing on the tax cap override, because if we, I don't know what would be, we do that at the next meeting, a public hearing.
If you want to do it after I present the budget, or you can do it.
Yeah, we can.
Now it's up to you.
I think might as well do it when we get the public hearing.
Okay.
I mean, again, we're not talking budget, but just the line item for insurance is like a $650,000 item that we spend. So if we're going to look at a 10% insurance, that's $65,000, and that pretty much sucks up most of our tax cap.
Is that you? Oh, okay. I was like, "Did we have a new alarm?"
Exactly. It was that one off the wall.
So we have our work to do on the budget, but as a safety blanket, associations of towns in the webinar I attended a couple of weeks ago, they recommended that we pass, and all municipalities should pass it just so we have it available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I was reading on insurance rates due to COVID in the last 2 years, they're looking at a 30% increase in health insurance.
Ours is 18 is coming up, right?
Yeah. Well,
I think they want the email Pearson sent.
They've been all over the place. So they started out at Capital Districts, MVP, whoever, Blue Cross, they kind of went to the state and the big ask was 28%. So I was talking to some other town supervisors, multiple now. I said, what are you guys putting in for numbers? So I had Pearson call Marshall and Sterling back. Now the state has gotten back to them, so it looks like the most they will get now is 11.5% at the max. So some are hoping, and it could be a hope of fingers crossed. We would be lucky if we got an 8 or 9, but I think right now we're showing like 11.5, because per Marshall and Sterling's, that's the high end that the state now has, if we've already, put that in the benchmark, so to speak. Fire departments, hopefully I got to work on it to get the public hearing together with Athens. They haven't heard much from these folks. They haven't heard anything from these
folks. Before we have a public hearing, we should know how to have a public hearing now. We haven't even sat down with Leeds Fire Department yet to discuss.
We just got the email that they were looking for the 10, 10, and 10. Again, without seeing any data, that's a big ask, in my opinion. So
agreed.
So we're going to have to...
Usually you start with the negotiation before a public hearing.
Right. But I mean, eventually you got to get there. But we got to have a meeting of the minds with these and find out. And I don't even know if I like the word negotiation. I'd like fire departments, including Leeds, to say this is what we really need to upgrade our building. And if they show us the hard facts of why they need it, then we should be giving it to them. And if they can't, then we probably should. Just back and forth. Again, I want them to give us the best possible price and give us a good value. And I think that's fair. Union contracts, sent that email out. October 31st is the first date that Elaine's available. There's a lot of holidays coming up, and so she's
October 31st?
Yeah. guess.
It's a holiday, it's Halloween.
Well, we're meeting on Halloween. That's not a, that's a, something, that's a holiday for some people. So
our budget will be 90% done.
Yeah. And we got a note, like we, you know, I put in a number of 3% in there. We're close to approving it at that point, because, you know, a few days later, because then she doesn't want to meet till the 9th, so.
You'll be approved at election, right?
Yeah,
we're at
election.
Well, your first meeting is November 1st. The first Tuesday in November is the first. Election day is on the 8th. So the budget has to be adopted no later than the 10th.
Right. So, again,
have they started the contract with the highway?
Mm-hmm. I don't know why she's. And I guess the union's not available, so their schedules aren't jailed.
Yeah, but it's like anything else. You can't come to an agreement. It's your contract.
That's right.
Yeah, we're going to review. So they just put their current numbers in there?
Right. We're throwing a number. I mean, we're going to survive it one way or the other, so we're going to be okay.
Right. You put a 3% in there because that's the most that you're going to get.
Right.
Because it's not negotiated. And that's what they got to live with.
Right.
You want it?
That's the best we can do.
Right.
I mean, a lot of times you go into these things without. I mean, I'd rather have it in place, but that's not the reality of it. And you know, their union doesn't seem to have any sense of urgency with it either. What do you think? You can't change it at this point anyway. So, health insurance we talked about, wages we talked about, and the big other thing there is fuel and energy.
So fuel costs are coming down.
For most of people's right.
Absolutely. It's down almost $2 a gallon for us.
It's the heating and stuff that's
right. So that, I mean,
yeah, well, I still can't figure out, right? So our cost today for diesel is $3.42, right? But at the pump, it's still almost $5.
Someone says they have to lower the pump price. Now.
Exactly, and that's what's happening.
Yeah, yep.
I mean, you're looking at the rack price, which I haven't done in years.
The market's going down, but the price of the pump is up.
Right. So their profit margin is
40 cents cheaper in Kingston to get gas.
Well, they took their tax.
Yeah.
Okay.
The.
Anything else, Liz, that we've got to talk about that we might be neglecting? Anybody else?
I just wanted to. The comprehensive plan.
Hey, we applied for that grant. I don't think we got it. I haven't heard anything.
That was a while back. Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
we applied for
last year.
We really probably should. It wasn't a lot, though.
No, but we should probably start moving in the direction of working it out.
I mean, we have a contract on file now, so it's not going to cost the $35,000 to rewrite it. As long as we have that file on the computer somewhere.
Right.
I'm sure this is.
And it's got to be around.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think that's a one-time expense as well. So if we want to use our, because that's, you know, that money's free out there. That's why we really got to, you know, start really focusing on what we want to accomplish. Are we really going to move forward with the rebound? Is a comprehensive plan something we want to spend it on? I mean, we got to look at roofs, at least at the ambulance building, and into the HVAC system. I mean, I think I'd like to get so it would be nice to get through the ARPA and have some of these major projects done. So,
where are we at with the builders?
We're good at the builders. Ted's okayed everything with that. They're supposed to be coming down here in the very near future with a window contractor, and I forget the name of it, but they're right in Middletown. So, if they are Anderson Windows, so they're going to bring the lumber yard, so to speak, or the window representative to, you know, measure these windows again to be exact and order. So really our whole project is really going to be based on the timeline of window delivery. You know, if they can get them here soon.
Yeah, windows are becoming a problem.
Right. That's the whole key with our project, because they don't want to get out here in the middle of winter and have
to start working.
And have gears. But yeah, so then we got and submittals as far as the siding, so we're working on the site, and they're going to send the samples, and then we're going to have to approve it. And I guess they call them submittals. And then once we agree, and I did talk to Simon in the back a little bit, and we did talk with our neighbors over here with the framing shop as far as if
we like something else, we can do that. But if anybody else has any suggestions on friends,
what's or shoes?
No, I don't know. I mean, paint's not. I mean, it just depends on what we want for our town.
No, I thought you were talking about the color of the sun.
Siding, I mean, I don't really want the cheapest. I want the one that's going to be the most durable.
Yeah.
I mean,
durable. I don't know.
The durability is a big thing to me now. I mean, to be honest, because I don't know if it's going to be another 50 years before somebody looks at the back of town hall. So
town hall will be
whatever it is. You know, something that's going to last. You know, I don't want to drive by here in 10 years and say, oh my God, the siding's sagging and it's blowing off. And
yeah.
Durability is sagging.
No, my point was if we have to pay extra for color, we'll get white.
No, I mean, no, the color on the siding is not an issue that way. I thought you meant the paint on it. You know, it's the, like I said, I was glad that we talked about Anderson Windows. At least it's a brand name that we're familiar with, and hopefully the quality will be there. And siding, when I talked to him, it's Erie's Builders, and it's Erie up in Albany, it's a big siding.
It's in my roof.
You'll know, bring them in, so that way. So they're looking, you know, I mean, it'd be nice to use a local vendor, but they're going to use a bigger drawer.
They really are local vendors for PFS.
So. Yeah, so it's, the process is starting to build up.
What about our animals?
I haven't really. I can tell you this.
Church just going to look at it?
I haven't heard the results. I don't even know if they were supposed to look at it. I haven't heard back from George. I can tell you I talked to Marshall and Sterling, and I believe we have a price of about $136,000 on the animals, is what we were insured for on that. You know, we set a price of that particular ambulance. So it's a penalty total. And that's another thing that we're going to have to look at.
What's the picture? It's still.
I have my scope to tell you if it's total or not.
Isn't it crazy that we had an accident going to an ambulance and now we've had another accident and hopefully we'll get to the ambulance?
Well, the girl got hurt. That was a bad accident.
Well, I mean, this one was obviously no fault of our operator. It's like, thank God nobody got hurt severely. That was a blessing. Well, I think the blessing there was that they didn't really T-bottle. They hit the front of the car. I mean, I didn't have good cell service that day, but if they hit that individual in the door,
right,
it would have been no mask.
The car was going the other direction and T-bottle the car on the phone.
Yeah. So I was very thankful that nobody wants to have accidents happening, but the severity of it was limited, so that was good. So yeah, we're going to have a conversation with George once we figure out where.
Sales 2 years now.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, didn't you say that you might have a demo dollars?
Yeah. And I wasn't talking. Speaking of that, though, Athens, we did come up with a number on the it's roughly about an 8%. That's a fair number. I mean, if anybody else has other opinions on the works.
No, I think at some point we have to have a serious conversation about ALS.
I don't like Athens to have that conversation.
Because I'd like to know how many times our ambulance actually goes there with a paramedic on it because we don't have a BLS crew to send.
Right. During the day, if we got BLS, we were sending it, but I can tell you, I mean, at night, it's
right, so we're sending an ALS crew. Right. We're not getting paid for an ALS crew. Whereas if we just took care of it,
we're not paid by contract for that exactly. If that makes sense. But if we we're getting reimbursed at the rate of service that we provide.
Correct.
You know, through the insurance side.
Through the customer, not through Athens.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, I think we've made some progress with those contracts over the years. To be honest, I mean. I do look at cost of labor. How we could figure in these percentage raises that we think they may be over insurance, and frankly, the days of 1.5. I mean, they got to whatever our cost escalates that year. You know, they got to look at a percentage of that increase, regardless. I mean, for what they pay, I mean, they could probably put 2 employees out there.
Okay,
I mean, we got, perfect example. I said, we got an ambulance accident. You guys are we're doing all the legwork. We got to figure this all out. You know, so there's just cutting that check. It's a nice contract to have.
That's why I think they're open to
I mean, that's important. It really is. But
absolutely.
So, that's the way I oppose it to them. That's true. So, but I don't think there's going to be a problem. problem with that. And I mean, I'll be honest with you, I'm okay with a one-year deal with Athens if everybody else is on that, because right now we're going into reunion contracts. We don't know what they're going to look like. So I think we might have a better picture. And again, the fluctuation in pricing is going so crazy, we may not want to lock in it. But if you guys would, if you want me to entertain it too, I would. I mean, means I want to go. I mean, I don't really want to be doing this every year with the fire department. I mean, I'd like to get a multiple year deal there. And even with a union contract, we're still looking to get, you know, the normal 3 to 4 year contract with our unions too. Because it's expensive to do these negotiations. So that's a guess for all of that. Does anybody want to entertain that emergency call out that we had on the, you know, the employee on the overtime thing? Or talk about it in executive session.
I'll make a motion given the circumstances around it that we authorize the recommended 4-hour call out for the employee.
Okay.
Second. Second by Dawn. So I'll just say that
again, this is not setting a precedent.
What Patrick is saying, Liz, it's like I just typed up a little thing here. So it's like for unforeseen emergency on Saturday, September 2nd, 2022. A call in of an off-duty employee was required to assist in remedying the situation. This is a one-time, non-precedent-setting decision of the town board authorizing a one-time payment of overtime. And that was available to us through our this policy, exception on the compensation and benefits manual. But again, it's a non-precedent-setting event. But is that pretty much what you're saying? And it was a public or community emergency type of thing for the town of Catskill that was unforeseen. So we've got a motion by Patrick, we've got a second by Dawn. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those against? So we got 4 yeses and 1 abstention.
I think we need to update some stuff on our policies and procedures regularly because of this occurrence.
We can. I mean, I talked to her. I talked to Pat Romney about it.
But the judges didn't realize they don't have the authority to do that.
That's the key. But not the judges. No department has that authority. That's why we Well, he doesn't have the authority. He's got it in the bargaining
agreement.
Yes, contractual. He's contractual. So he doesn't have the authority to go outside his contract either. And nor does anybody else in this building that works with it. If we're going to make an exception to it, it's nice that we have to do it. But again, it's an exception. It should be a rule.
The arbitrary 4-hour.
Ronnie's in the process of updating the manual now. So if there's any changes, if you want to review the manual, I'm sure she'll redline what she's changing. I looked at another town's policies the other day, which happened to be Ronnie Arthur, and I said there was one clause in there of another situation we're dealing with. I want another statement put in there that ultimately closes that situation down completely. So we had that discussion today. But once we redline that, we'll bring that in.
That was Chair. Should that cover?
I don't know. To be honest with you, I haven't done a follow up with her. I had intentions too, but the days kind of.
No, I just didn't know if Liz. Do you know if she's back to work or is she still?
I don't know. No, I know who you're speaking of, but I don't know.
And I tried to do some research on through the paper, and I didn't see anything that, Sarah, but I'll make it a point to call her tomorrow. So.
But I mean, my thoughts on that, I think, like how we have our monthly report, I think we should have a report from dog control monthly.
I agree with that. I think we should get more reports of a lot of things. It's just a little bit. The more little data we have, it's just.
We get nothing from. We spend $7,500 and we have no idea where it goes. None of us on this board know what the dog warden is doing in the town of Catskill. So that's why.
Right. I have no idea. She does 25 calls a month, once a day.
Right. You should have a report that lists out.
How many dogs didn't have licenses? How many were referred to get a license? Things of that nature.
How many transports to Columbia Green?
Right.
Well, that you do know at the end of the year, because the Humane Society tells you how many dogs that
they
take in. It's usually about 25 per year.
I'd rather have a monthly report from the dog control, just like we get from COPE. How many violations cited, how many violations acted upon.
Right. I think if we want those reports, we might have to be in a situation that somebody can set up an Excel sheet. If we're going to ask if these people don't have secretaries, they may or may not be very great with the computers and such like that.
Just paper and pencil. Don't need a computer.
Send it in an email. Just type it in.
Calendar. We have a spreadsheet. Here's the month. Do I check hash marks? Somebody this, somebody that, and you can just put it.
Does everybody have some sort of report from the department?
What's that?
Does everybody agree we should have reports from all departments?
I think we should have, we should have reports of all departments, and then a little bit that comes back on us as
cemetery. Because we know how many graves they sell or how many people they bury roughly, because we get that data.
Right. Like that.
We get zero data from, that's the one department we get zero data on. George's, we get all the payroll reports, we get incident reports, we get all that stuff. But that's the one department we get zero data on.
Right.
So, Jamie updates us on what's going on at the senior center.
Well, she's, right. We can do her in the Facebook. She does a great job up there, by the way.
2.2 million views.
Jim Riley's going to do a bit on some cables, going to do a shoot there on Friday. Did you know that? Because we had glance, we were there already.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're on News Channel 6.
She's 6 or 10. So, but I mean, Bidhuck's we can bring that up through Rachel Fisher. They're donating the Wi-Fi at the senior center now, so that's a good thing to have. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so we got that. So they did a thing. So they're going to be mentioning that.
They get the accounts up.
The tax exempt account. We haven't done that yet. That's probably me.
It's not really for us to set up.
Right, but they need assistance.
No, they need assistance because there's been a lot of people that have reached out and want to make a donation.
Right, they want to make a donation.
So all they need, we need a local CPA to volunteer his time to help them set up a.
It's easy to set up a tax ID. You just need somebody that they're going to appoint for officers that are going to take responsibility. Setting up the numbers is the easy part, but who's going to manage it is really.
They have a good court group up there.
Yeah, they do. So anyway, that's going to happen on Friday, so it's going to be channel 11. So if anybody wants to come up, my friend.
The TV's not off, but
it's going to come up, so I got to go up.
I thought the storm board
says that's hard to fill up.
That's okay. That will be SPT, yes.
This is going to go up.
You'll
work for it too. Is that top? Oh, my God. I'm not doing
cameras.
I
have to
go. I think we'll do it. Because it's my friend. They want to cheer. All right. So, anything else going on? How's he looking here? Good. Liz, anything that we're forgetting? Things that need attention?
I don't think so.
Be aware of.
I think we're good.
So just getting back to what we say, let's really give that a good look. Yeah. It doesn't have to be a decision next month, but next couple of months I'd like to. We definitely know we want to do it.
It's something we should say we're going to do.
Then we should be doing a resolution, so that way we're earmarking the ARPA funds, so we can just like with the county, we earmark them, so that way Kirsten can put that note and say, okay, we're going to reserve $375,000 of ARPA.
Whether or not we have to educate the community,
right? And we don't have to spend it through to 2026, but we do have. It's nice to have that out of the way, and then we'll start giving us an indicator of what else. And it could be the comprehensive plan. It's not going to be some roofs, but at least we're making some progress on some of these items. If the will is there, if it's not, then that's fine too. But in my estimation, as much as it's going to be a difficult process, or however you want to look at it, but this is the only time that I. And what other time are we going to have that kind of money to do this? And it does bring everybody up to a playing field. So let's get ready to go.
I have some reservations on it. They just started to spend $375,000 on it. Then
sounds like if we don't do it now, we're going to have to do it later anyway. Because you said
we've been having to do it later for 12 years.
We're down at 40. I mean, it's.
nobody does.
They don't arrest government officials.
It's the right thing to do because we do have a lot of people. As much as some people are going to go on, we have other people in our community that are subsidizing somebody else. I mean, everybody's worried about just the person that's going to go on. But there's also many, many people right now that are paying more than their fair share.
And you have to realize, too, a lot of people that are...
And that's true.
...are elderly, especially, have the superstar. Right. So it's not going to change them anyway.
And some of those individuals could be subsidizing some of the properties now.
Correct.
To my point, it's hard to make a decision on something you don't know, that you don't have a concrete answer. That's my view.
Well, you don't have a concrete answer on how what the income, I mean, what the outcome is. But that, you know, nobody's going to know what that pie looks like.
Right.
I mean, the only thing I'll say is, but again, we're not allowed to go on those properties, but we had a situation, and her data collector does a great job, I'll be honest with you, but, you know, they're seeing maybe a garage that's not, you know, no permits, but you do the overhead, and there's a structure there now.
Right.
That's so the words, and you can't get at it, but we know the structure's there, and they want to buy it, and they, today.
Yeah.
So I guess that's...
Out, and you can't see it from the road. Maybe we're going to see it on an Airbnb someday.
Probably.
And if we see that, then we can say, okay, wait a minute, that garage that you're telling me, garage which never told us that this garage is there now, and now you may have a one-bedroom apartment that
you're
renting
out. Well, if it's the one on High Falls Road that I told you about last summer, she's doing an Airbnb.
So, if we're doing all this...
We got to have a question. Let's follow up with that, because if we can get it, I mean, if we can get aerial photos of Google Earth or whatever, and then we can see that on an Airbnb site, that's probably enough information to say.
Are we, when we're done with all this data collection, and they come up with all these houses that have an addition, are we turning all this information over to a court officer to go take a visit to all these houses?
Yeah, I think we might have to. And if nothing else, first of all, if they don't have a permit, then they probably don't have a CO for them.
Well, that's what I'm getting at.
Right, so that's definite. And the other side of that is that they're going to have to still get assessed for that square footage that they're having, that they haven't been paying for.
Right.
So
then we're going to have to hire another person to code to handle all of these, because you know that's what it's going to be.
Right, but that's going to bring value. That's going to bring more taxable value to our town, and that's going to help somebody else from not going up, or everybody from not as going up.
So all of the people that own apartment buildings on Main Street, and they have six apartments,
they're paying whatever that thing was assessed for 30 years.